Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, the 27th of July, 1995. In the fireside room this evening is the forum. The topic is the politics of language. Let's listen in.
My role is very simply to start this off and to more or less get out of the way. Before we begin, let me introduce the people who are on the panel. I can start over here to my right. We have Lori and then her father, Larry, Scott, and we have Brian and Chris Lindblad, and we have Connie Larson. People. Sorry. And I'm Tom Feet. What I told them we were going to do was just simply start with a question and would like them to respond individually, but then to have the opportunity to ask questions with one another so that we get to explore a little bit more about why they respond that way, why they see things the way they do. And the question is the one that has to do about the issue of worship, and when worship is dealing with cultures that have a fundamental difficulty in being able to communicate with one another. So that when the question comes up of how do the deaf worship, the question has to come up with, well, how do the hearing worship? And what is it about the way in which one culture worships that seems to be either a barrier or an accelerator, something which is open to the other culture? And so to kind of discuss that a little bit further, we thought by having a chance to talk with and have them discuss what it looks like and what are some of the key issues that they see that is stopping that sense of community. Right, then I think it would be a rich discussion. As I understand the rules of these forums, the intent is not to drive to an agreement, to come up with some overarching final case, but simply to do an exploration of ideas and to see where it flows from here to the time that we'll stop. We were, according to the schedule, supposed to start at 8:30, and it's now 8:45. Is everybody okay to stay for an hour until 9:45, so we can spend the hour, if you wouldn't mind? Let me kind of keep an eye on that.
Lori wanted to go early, didn't she?
Lori wanted to leave her. I'm sorry. Yeah. Another party going on that I don't know.
I got that. I want to go to the lift. There's some plays going on there.
Oh,
and stuff,
okay.
It's nothing. I don't have to.
We can figure out where we are for that. So, let me start then with the question. And, well, first of all, out of the five of you, does anybody have a birthday in July? August? In August? Good, you get the So the question is this. First of all, tell us a little bit about where you are in the deaf and the hearing community, so that we have a chance to kind of hear about that. And then give us a couple words about what you see as those barriers, and also the paths between the cultures regarding this notion of worship.
Well, our daughter, Marissa, is hard of hearing, and so she's kind of right in between the two worlds. She's not really a part of the hearing world because she doesn't hear well and a lot goes past her. She's not really a part of the deaf world because She's not here at a sale. She does hear some. I guess, speaking to the dilemmas with worship, I mean, I can speak to just like some specific problems that I can, you know, I can think of. We live in Moscow, Idaho, in a large church family. Marissa is the only hard of hearing or deaf person aside from senior citizens who have grown up hearing and have language and communication and everything, but are now losing their hearing. But in Marissa's case, what does Sunday morning offer for her? She's 9 years old, and you know, up until this point, it's do we hire an interpreter for the church service at, you know, $30 a Sunday for a 9-year-old that's probably not going to pay attention that much? Do we ask the church family to provide that when there's already, you know, other issues at stake? I mean, you know, budget problems anyway. Do we change churches? There is, you know, there is another church over in another community that would have an opportunity for, you know, for an interpreter if, you know, if we went possibly. I don't know. It's like we spend a lot of our time advocating in the school setting, advocating for, you know, technology, for interpreters, for teachers who are hearing impaired. I feel right now like I'm a giant IEP, actually.
Lauren, no!
When it comes to worship in church, I don't feel like, you know, it should necessarily be our role to advocate. It should be the church family, you know, reaching out. And Marissa's in a unique situation in between worlds, and I don't think hearing people appreciate the block of language, the block of communication. Sometimes she's in that situation. You know how it is when you go to France and you say in French, you know, oui, la jolie fête, and they come back with 10 paragraphs. Because you said one sentence, they assume that you're going to understand everything that comes out. So when Marissa speaks, then people assume, of course, that she's going to be able to understand and hear what's going on, and it's not the case. She really doesn't fit in the case of it. It's complicated. This morning it occurred to me when we were talking about the conflict of cultures and how your work stands with, you know, getting people to co-promote and most of the cultural situations that involve language, it's so different, you know, from a deaf situation, because, you know, if you're talking about a Hispanic community or a Chinese community or an Italian community, people can become bilingual. A person who is hard of hearing or deaf, they can't become bilingual. It's not going to happen. And so that means that the hearing culture has got to travel farther in my mind. Because the deaf person, I mean, they're not going to become bilingual. They will with the English, but they're not going to be able to hear it. So, if you have questions.
And have a Lord. See, Father. Father.
This the same question, right? My background. Most of my life I grew up in I was hearing. And then a few years ago, I lost my hearing. When I was growing up, I'd get into church, had a lot of interaction with the church, and I found my comfort, my spirit level, well, it hadn't quite developed. I mean, my spirit developed just a few years ago, just really strongly. It developed from my hearing loss and all the other things that were going on in my life at that time. I agree. I think the church, quote, the family of the church should be providing accessibility, interpreters, technology, or whatever, for people in the church who need it or want it. Most mainline churches, they don't have accessibility. They don't have interpreters. They don't have whatever. All those things, they just don't have it. They don't realize it. And then, of course, there's the money. So what happens, people, deaf people, hard of hearing, remember, ADA says, you know, we're all supposed to be providing interpreters and technology, and that all goes back to the money issue. So it happens, you know, and you put an interpreter in front. But the sign skill, well, that's a different story. This is a difficult question.
Yeah, my, you know, it's very interesting. My background with deaf and hearing impaired people goes all the way back to the early 1970s when I ran multiple manufacturing plants in the clothing industry. And in the largest plant that I ran, I had five people who were deaf working for me. And of course, I don't know if it was ASL then or not, but I knew nothing about communicating with these people. All I knew is they had come and applied for positions, and these were positions in which it was not important that they be able to hear, as long as through written communication we could communicate. And so I'll never forget one fellow who happened to be the head custodian, and he was deaf. And every morning, even though he came in at like at 2 o'clock in the morning to begin to clean the factory, he would never clean my office until after I arrived, because he wanted to come in and talk. And so he would come in and he would write things to me, and I would write things back to him, and that was how we communicated. And I really didn't think anything more about the hearing or the deaf community until Lori chose as a vocation to go into deaf education. And this was prior to her suffering her hearing loss. And as a result of her desire to go into deaf education and beginning to teach in the deaf school, then we began to get more involved with her and with some of the things she was doing, some of her friends. And it was then that I really began to realize more that there was an uncomfortableness being around her friends, because I couldn't communicate with them. And I'm not a very good person to have other people have to help me do something. And so there I'm sitting there, you know, having to get somebody else to communicate. And of course, in just our family setting, Lori's, it gets along good with us. She and I traveled a week together recently. And, you know, because she speaks fine, and because we know how to speak to her so she can hear us, you know, and that works out very well. So, you know, I've become more aware of this. And then in our congregation in Spokane, we have one young boy, who, he must be close to junior high school now, I guess. He has suffered a hearing loss over the last few years. And we've begun to see, and this is a mainline denomination, mainline Lutheran church. Middle income, like all Lutheran churches, you know, never has enough money to go around, but we get by. Nothing is being offered to this boy. So he just kind of, you know, we have hearing aids in the pews, you know, so he hooks into that. But his hearing loss is going to become a total hearing loss. And so, you know, the church is not doing anything for him. And so I'm really torn, you know, because I've met some wonderful deaf people sitting right next to me here. There are two of them. And if they lived in my town, I would love to have them come and worship at my church. And I would be an advocate of going to my congregation and saying, we've got to figure out a way to reach out to these people, because that's part of what evangelizing is. But I also would have to ask the question, you know, would the deaf people, number one, accept that, because they would be maybe only two or three or four at first? And are they interested enough in that to come to the church and speak to the church for themselves, so that it's not just some of us who are always trying to come up with little avenues, perhaps?
Okay. I was born deaf, and I have a sister who's hard of hearing. It's just the two of us. I'm older than her, and we grew up in hearing culture, in a hearing family. It was a large family, and the two of us really didn't sign. We were oral. We spoke. At the church we went to, everything just went right by us. You know, we'd sit and talk with each other. We didn't understand what was going on. Then the two of us were in the same room, and well, we were oral, and she understood my language. My parents, you know, we would try to talk, but they couldn't always understand. We were shy and pretty quiet growing up. My sister had a lot of frustration because she was frustrated. I could see that. School. Well, it was pretty hard for me. You know, I got through it, but it wasn't enough for me. My sister went to public school, and she had a lot of attention. For myself, I felt I had sort of a limit. There was about 10 children in the class, and I learned, well, what I could. I never knew what a deaf was like. I just saw mostly the hearing. I really didn't know what being deaf really was until I felt almost that I was the same as hearing. I didn't want to accept that I was deaf until, well, one friend in my class, she could sign. And she wasn't allowed to do it in school. She didn't hide it, and I learned it from her, and I was really surprised. I went over to her father's home. I went there for the weekend. I'd learned a little bit of sign, you know, and it was when I was about a teenager. And I learned more and more through high school. I was learning just more sign, but not in the open. You had to really hide it. You had to hide it from my parents. Until I graduated, and I went out on my own, and I had my own life, and I started to see more. I grew up and I saw my hearing family studied. I studied their actions, their personalities, their silliness, their sense of humor, and all the different things I had to study myself just through using my vision. Now my sister, she ran away from home. She was when she was 15 years old. For me, I got along with my family okay. They tried the best I could. And, you know, I could understand my parents. What they said to me, I really didn't understand everything, but, you know, I accepted what I was. Okay. Later on, I had my oldest daughter. First I thought she was hearing. You know, that's what the doctor had said. But when she was about 3 years old, I felt she was hard of hearing. Because I felt that she was the same as my sisters. I started to sign with her. I had her go to a public school first. And then my second daughter, Kanisha, my third daughter, Benita, those two are here, are deaf. And I've just been studying, seeing how they grew, and it just really impacted me. And my husband, too. Going through mainstream school, seeing, well, just feeling like it just isn't right. There's not enough for them there. So, you know, we were looking, and life was going on, we were trying to decide what to do, so we moved to Washington School for the Deaf and felt much happier, felt the children were learning a lot, and now it just, I really understand what deaf culture is about. And I grew up basically in hearing culture, but now I've just started switching over to deaf culture. Really before, I was kind of half and half. I was mixed. I wasn't really either one. I didn't know what deaf culture really was. But now I do. Now I see. Through my kids. Me? I was born, not really sure if I was hearing or deaf. I asked my parents and they still really didn't know. I mean, I was born that way. Also, I have an older brother who's deaf. They were about 16 months apart. But his mind, he's just high IQ. He went to public school, you know, just straight through all his years. I went to a mainstream school. Yeah, mostly oral. I didn't pick up anything at all. I didn't learn anything. Absolutely nothing. Myself, I love to play, challenge, you know, just for the years. As time went on, my parents didn't sign. They're only oral. I never understood. There was no communication. My older brother, he can communicate pretty well. I really depended on my brother. I depend on him too much. What they say, yeah, like that. We went to church. My parents always took us. We sat in the front row of the church. My parents expected that I could understand what they were talking about. I sat there and it just all went by me. I couldn't say, wait, what did you say? I mean, there's a huge crowd. I couldn't stop them. You know, I just let it go. I was just really restless, you know, sitting there for hours. My brother and I, we'd always talk to each other in church all the time. And then, also, my parents took us to Sunday church, Sunday school, for 2 hours. A nun there, you guys should not communicate with me. It would give me the Bible, and I would look at the Bible, you know, and say, okay, I finished it. And she'd tell me to read it again. And I felt like I went to Sunday school for several years. They always just left me out.
was that through seventh grade? I started picking up a lot of things, I've learned, you know, really late. Then one teacher was a teacher in a deaf school in another state. He could sign. He had transferred over to the oral school. At SMO, sign for oral school, but didn't allow, the oral school didn't allow a sign. Somehow, he started signing, and I caught him signing. And then I found out that teacher lived near my home. And I started going over to his home on the weekend. And he would sign there, and I would sign. And then I found that I could communicate. And, you know, that went along. And that's how basically I learned sign. And I can communicate. Before, communication was just prevented. There was too much misunderstanding. So sign, now with signing, I can understand it. You sign it once, I can understand it. And it's like a peer-to-peer. Now my first job, I first worked at a newspaper delivery. I had a problem with collecting the money for the newspaper. So I decided I would write it all out. Hi, my name is Brian. I'm collecting money for the newspaper. And I just handed it to them all in my area. Everybody knew me. Every month I did that. And I did newspapers for a long time. No, I don't remember how long. But that's how I made money for living, you know. I collected all that money. I wanted to buy a new Bible. And it just kept going. I liked working with my hands, earning money. And that just kept going since that time. I like working with people, earning money for living. And now I can communicate in both.
A thought struck me. You always wonder why you do these things. And something you said, Brian, about being in church and not understanding what was going on. I was born and raised and still in the Roman Catholic. I spent the first 14 years of my life in a church where nobody used to because the Mass was in Latin, the texts were in Latin, and so I had this wonderful image that I've never had before.
That's true. I was baptized there, you know, and for a long time. When I graduated, I never went back.
Because there was nothing to do. Questions that you may have, questions that you may have of one another, especially regarding the notion of what did you hear, what's this relationship between the deaf, the hearing culture, and church worship?
I've not had a lot of experience with the deaf community. So I'm trying to come up with an analogy. I have a number of friends who are gay and lesbian who find the church a difficult place for them. The traditional church does not accept their differences. I've had helpful conversations with these people to help me to understand how the church would be different if they felt more included, how the church would need to be different if they felt more welcome. And I'd like to hear from you what the church would be like if you felt more welcome.
you think somebody? Well, an idea or an example of that might be. You know, Paul, you know, he was preaching so far about, you know, to the nations for years, you know, about changing the popes and ordaining women, you know, and it really was a screw up, I think, you know. I don't know. Wait a minute. Or allowing birth control for Catholics, you know, that too is, you know, it's just too confusing. It's another screw up. That's like an idea that I would have with that.
Where do you worship now? In a deaf church or in a hearing?
That question.
Deaf church.
Right.
Chris is responding. In a deaf church in Portland. It's a small church. You know, it's a chapel where deaf people come, and some hearing people can come too. I mean, it just began, and we just began going there about three years ago. It's part of the deaf community. Mm-hmm.
And worshiping in that deaf community, how does it feel different, or what's different from, say, worshiping here at Fulton or in another church? My original question is, can deaf and hearing worship together or not? Or is the language just different?
Well, I hear it. It's very interesting to me at Holden. I'm learning a lot. But in Portland, it's ASL, you know, the church. It's all ASL. And that's one of the reasons I want my children to go there. Here, well, it's very interesting and I'm enjoying it. I've noticed more and more people, you know, are very much involved, and people are trying to sign here. So, and this is very large, and in Portland, of course, it's extremely small, very small.
I'm sure that it probably is the same church that I have attended in Portland with Lori one time, just as a visitor to this church. And speaking as a hearing person, I was able to worship in that church quite comfortably, because the minister both spoke and signed. Now, whether he did that just because he knew there were hearing people there that morning, I don't know. But we could appreciate and we could worship. But I came away from there really concerned as a Christian person. And I guess I would ask, well, maybe even I would ask Grace, how many people are part of the deaf community in the greater Portland area in terms of numbers, and then find out how many people attend that church, and then you talk about a mission field.
I was just clarifying the sign.
Grace, do you want to respond?
In Portland, there are several deaf churches. The Lutheran, of course, being the longest standing in years because of the LCEMS has had the oldest mission field around the United States than any other congregation or denomination. In terms of, I was a deaconess in the Portland area with the DAP, and there's a great mission field there. The question becomes that question of how does the church be church and not just be missions? It's that sense of comfort, that sense of being a member as opposed to being served by. And there's issues that the church, this is the issue the church, mainline, big, hearing, deaf, need to be talking to each other about. And back as we go.
Let me just go back to Larry's question. How large is the deaf community? Right now, let's say Portland, Vancouver, Portland, Vancouver. And then out of that proportion, what number would worship? In some way, in terms, can be identified with the congregation. Who could answer that?
Now, the deaf community, how many are there? Portland and Vancouver all together. Chris is saying it's large. Yeah, it's large. There's several deaf churches, Chris says. Laura says, yeah, I know there's a number of deaf churches. I know my friend's church is very large. It's a large group. I've gone and socialized with them. Now they aren't really church people. They don't go to church, so. You're talking about, talk about God or Christian or whatever. I know they just wouldn't understand it.
How many are you confused, Chris?
They're saying, the people who, they follow all these rules and all that type of thing, and they just say, no, I'm not involved in that. I tried to explain about it, but they aren't interested. Now, the number, the deaf community in Portland and Vancouver all together, it's pretty big. The people who go to church, it's definitely much smaller. I would assume. It's definitely a very much smaller.
I would agree with their sisters.
Unless there's a special day, then you'd have more people that would go to church.
That's very true. That's good, Chris.
But is there a lot of pent-up demand amongst the deaf community? Are they so turned off by mainstream religion that they're not interested in trying, that they're going to set up their own churches that cater specifically to the deaf? Or if there were accommodation in the mainline denominations with the floodgates open, then would we see the people come?
I guess I have another question, and that is that if the preacher is hearing and you have an interpreter, regardless of how gifted that interpreter may be in liturgical sign, is it still, and you don't have, even if you have a fairly large deaf community within and a hearing community that's joined, I'm still not sure that it would work to build a church family together.
We have a primary question, kind of corollary. Lori, will you respond to the first question?
Yeah, but I forgot that.
Why don't you just?
I
Well, the conflict sometimes comes from pent-up demand, where people want to do something, but they're waiting for like a trigger. Like when they sell, when more cars are sold than somebody expected, they said, oh, there was pent-up demand, and all of a sudden, there was good news in the economy, and everybody went out and bought a new car. I'm just wondering, in the Portland, Vancouver area, or any other area, small town, whatever, do you feel that there's a large population of the deaf community that's holding back from the mainline denominations? And if they were partially, even partially accommodated, would they come? Or is the future going to be like the Portland case of setting up your own churches? You know, you just want to be met even partly halfway, or has there been enough frustration with the way things have been in the past that there's no demand there? There's no. It seems to me that even here this week, deaf people come a lot closer to my world than I am going into theirs. And that's partly laziness on my part that I don't sign well enough. But if we even made the first step towards accommodating the deaf community, towards facilitating whatever they need to feel comfortable and to want to come, so they feel like they're a part and not, you know, like Grace was saying, they're not being served, but they're a part of us and not we're catering to them. Would that help? I mean, would that make a difference, an appreciable difference? Good rambling question.
My experience so far with my friends, they're deaf, and I'm talking about 15 or 20 people, you know, very close friends. And they have no idea about church, you know, what it means, what it looks like, what's it for. You know, they grew up, maybe they went to Christmas and Easter and whoopee, you know, but they don't have that interest. They don't really understand why you go, the whys and the wherefores of the church. They don't really understand any of the purpose. For a while, I kind of like looked at it, and I asked myself, you know, maybe I should remove myself from church for a while. And about 3 or 4 years, I did. Remove myself from church. I kind of avoided the issue for many reasons. But I know that's a real tough question. That's a tough question.
What difference does it make if you have an individual who can, I think, as you said, sign the liturgical sign, and what would the structure look like that would be different in terms of, or how would you make it more appealing to the deaf in order to worship? Is that fundamentally what you'd ask for, is it something further today?
Yeah. I mean, this is for Chris and Brian to answer, because I don't know. The only analogy I can say is that, you know, say I'm in a Spanish-speaking church and everything is coming to be translated. It's not the same as hearing it in my own language. And no matter how good my translator is, it's not the same. And that is compounded, I think, between deaf and hearing, because it's possible, you know, with two oral languages for, you know, people to come closer than it is. So, I don't know. I would just think the comfort level with a community of deaf and a pastor that signs would far outweigh anything hearing church could offer.
So what you're saying...
Is that true?
So you'll almost be arguing for the idea that you would have a hearing, you would have a worship community that would be wholly deaf, and the leader of it would be somebody who would sign. And that it would be aimed specifically at the deaf culture. And you're asking the question, is that the best way to go?
For me, the pastor or priest who signs or for themselves, I would be much more comfortable with that, you know, and for my children as well. You know, I think other deaf people would feel the same. I remember a while back, maybe it was in the 70s, you know, there was an interpreter at church, and, you know, I would go once in a while. It wasn't frequent, but once in a while. And my older daughter, you know, she would go once in a while, and finally she would see, you know, the pastor sign for himself. And it was better, but, you know, it was still mixed with the hearing. It was a very large congregation. And I felt comfortable because, you know, people didn't understand about deaf culture and about deaf people. And maybe that's why I didn't go frequently until now. You know, so far, what should I say about this? Maybe eight or 9 years ago, I finally, the deaf church established itself, you know. And hearing people are welcome to come, you know, if they can understand deaf culture, they'll feel more comfortable because the kids always, you know, make noise and, you know, like they... Parents would be looking around and you wouldn't know what was going on, but I don't pay attention to the noise because I don't hear it. And, you know, and the deaf community church is much more comfortable and casual, and you know, because we're all the same.
Other questions? Yes.
I have two questions. One is, it's a bit of a strange question to me, but I'm going to ask it anyway, and that is, music is such an important part of worship for me. And I'm imagining that there is music within the hearing impaired community, some form of music, but I don't know what it is. And I'm curious as to how does music happen? Other than just the words of music, how does music happen in the hearing impaired community and worship? So that's one question. I do have another one, but I want to say that.
Want to go to that one first now?
Yeah.
Okay, question about music. And in just in general, not even just the liturgy, but...
Well, yeah, I'm thinking of worship because that's the context in which I've been with you all this week, but...
Lori?
No, I'll confront that one. Obviously, now you see me sign songs. You know, this week you've seen me sign the music. A lot of times at Vespers, and people come up to me and say, "Oh, that's beautiful. You know, I love the performance. It's gorgeous. It's really thrilling." That's worship for me. I'm not performing. That's, you know, my gift. People kind of misunderstand. They think that, oh, music means, you know, you can add on things and, you know, it's much more emotional in a performance. And no, that's me. That's how I worship. You know, it doesn't matter if I hear the music or not, it's the words that impact me. Chris, I agree. The signing in church, you know, we don't have any music. I look at the paper and, you know, follow the words and sign that. That's my music. And, you know, that's what's good for me. Now, deaf culture, you can't hear. You follow the actions. You follow the movement. That's what it is. That's Chris is saying that's my worship. I agree with Lord.
It's kind of the rhythm component. I remember an old teacher of mine, matter of fact, who would work at the Ithaca College in New York, and she was a conductor of music. And she would work with deaf people throughout the year, where she was one of the pioneers having the deaf children sitting with the other musicians and holding on to the cello to hear to feel the vibration, to hold the timpani, to be able to those instruments that had percussion or had vibration to them, because that element of rhythm and sensing, tactile, was a component that they were just beginning to understand. I don't believe I understand it, but it was a connection with music that hadn't been tried before, and they had some fairly strong success. So I mean, there's multiple ways. We're almost limited by hearing to think that music is only that kind of last bit of audio sensation we get when there's many components to the notion of music.
Yeah, I had a part B to that first question. I still want to ask questions.
Yes, Laurie was going to answer.
Oh, excuse me. Laurie, did you want
about the vibrations?
Oh, I wanted to say something about music and the feeling for the vibrations that and everything. That's cool. But you don't need it. And you don't need perfection with rhythm. For worship. For example, last night I made a mistake. During one of the songs, you know, I was signing away and I looked over at Grace and my signs didn't match her lips. And I was like, I panicked. You know? And but I went back and pretty good. It has been my experience with music to put the boom boxes on the floor and let the bass, you know, vibrate everything, and then I would feel it. So that's how I got some assistance with music. You know, put it up to my head, it does nothing, but put it down on the floor, and Chris said, yeah, I could do that.
Well, I was also just thinking about all the lights that now are in technology around music, where lights have different kinds of rhythms to it and different colors, and how that, at least for me, as one who hears, has added another dimension to music. My other question was around not what I, as a member of the hearing community, can do for the hearing impaired, but what the hearing impaired can do for me. In that I might be the hearing impaired's mission field. You know, it's the reverse. It's that they're not my mission field, I'm their mission field. Because I've realized this week that I'm receiving a lot without really seeking it out. But I'm receiving a lot from all of you. And it's hard to know what I'm actually receiving. It's hard to put words to it. But there's a fuller dimension to my worship and my experience in community. And I just don't know how to define what that fuller dimension is. But what I was wondering is, suppose a congregation actually brought in an interpreter without any hearing impaired people in the congregation, just brought in an interpreter for the hearing community. And if hearing impaired people wanted to participate in that, that's an invitation. But it's not for them, it's for the hearing community. I can imagine that my worship would be deepened and enriched. And so I was just wondering what thoughts about that.
Anybody want to step? Go for it.
Right now I'm involved with the Hearing Church, and on Sunday I get up and I sign because people and are impacted, you know. I think that if the Hearing Church wants to hire an interpreter to show up and sign, that's wonderful. You know, they should go for it. About the invitation for deaf or hearing impaired people to join, for myself, if, you know, in worship I feel the impact of sign, I'm going to do that. You know, and people are asking me, I might not want to do that. I don't want it to become a job. It's worship for me. It's real worship, authentic worship. And I need to know, you know, that it's worship and not a job for other people, you know, doing it for other people.
Other questions?
My question would be very simple. Would the people in the deaf community prefer having signers available whenever they are there? I think as one in the hearing community, we have an obligation to help the person who's in a wheelchair get into that church, so we spend money to build the ramp. If it means that we have to have something for a blind person, we have to do something for that. It's unfair that one particular congregation has to put out extra bucks for it, but it is something. And I know one church, I think they have signers twice a month. They got the grant from Lutheran Brotherhood to support part of it.
Did they send them to a Catholic church?
Excuse me, it's difficult for us to interpret overlapping conversation. So Lutheran Brotherhood gave a grant. And repeat yours, please.
I asked if they would send it to a Catholic church.
Yes.
Lutheran Brotherhood.
And now we left. There we go. We caught up.
Thank you.
By the way, questions are preference.
I understand. Response?
In our situation, I think it would be great. Because Marissa right now is in a situation where there's not a deaf church that we're going to become a part of. And the church is going like pastor. She's 9. I look at the other 9-year-olds. They're not necessarily paying attention, but they're starting to. And they get a lot of church because they just hear the words fall on their ears, and they're not expected, nothing's expected of them. They just get all that casual communication of spirit and community through the words that fall on their ears. And she gets none of that. So I think in our situation, it would be very helpful to have an interpreter there. Is it my responsibility to provide that interpreter?
I was saying congregation, I think, as a challenge there.
But it's hard for me, the mom, to go to my congregation and say, we need to spend this money for my daughter. Because then she'd sit there, she'd diddle around, tell her, and, you know, and everyone's going, we're this interpreter, she could be paying attention, you know.
A number of years ago, our church in Spokane put in some ramps and some other things to, because we had one boy in the congregation who was confined to a wheelchair. And also because it made it easier for some of the elderly to get in and out. And interestingly enough, even though we as a congregation, we spent that money to do that, I look around, sometimes the elderly are sleeping, not seeming to pay an awful lot of attention to the service, but we still went ahead and did that. So I guess if I was on your church council, I'd have to come back and probably say, I don't see any difference between the fact that a little girl might look around and not pay strict attention to the interpreter. But to me, it's the intent to offer to people who have a need the opportunity to come and worship in that church if that's what they want to do.
Can I step out of the role of an interpreter to make that answer to Jim Weber? Okay. I'd just like to answer as an interpreter. I would never accept a job in a church where there were no deaf people because I interpret for access of language.
I live in Seattle, Washington, and I do work for the church council to help the cultural diversity of that city find a way to see themselves as a church in the midst of their diversity. One of the things we've discovered is that the most segregated day of the week is Sunday. Blacks worship with blacks, Hispanics with Hispanics, Asians with Asians. I know women friends of mine who stepped out of the church for a long period of time because the church didn't speak to them. Gay, lesbian friends of mine stopped worshiping because the church wasn't speaking to them, and now there are special masses or services where they feel welcome. It's not a question, just a statement of sadness that in the midst of God's creation, we seem to, this is just another example for me of divisiveness. And I wonder, what can we do to begin to embrace each other as community? It's not really a question, it's just a statement.
We are closing into the end. But that last statement raises a question that I have to pose for you. So what's the choice? Is for the sake of worship, however you define that, is it best to say what we need to do as a church is to provide that access to language, as Grace said, which is an interpreter, he's with the money to go ahead and sustain that, to be able to publicize it for you. Or does true mission really mean recognizing that the deaf culture can feel more comfortable, would be more accessible to the worship process, would feel more positive about their understanding of this notion of worship by, in fact, creating or sustaining a church, as Chris and Brian said, exists. It's a church for the deaf, and specifically to be able to sustain that community. And it's a question of which is the is do you do both, or do you go ahead and reach out to the deaf, hard of hearing community and say, tell me how you worship best and how can we go ahead and support that? Rather than starting with the assumption that says, this is the way hearing people worship, how can we help you worship when they need it? Is that question too simplistic? Is it desires? But that seems to be a fundamental choice, a fundamental split in the world. Anybody want to respond to that? Are there other choices? What is the authentic way to go? Because it really brings it around once again to that notion you've got two couples.
I'll speak to that. You know, I would prefer a way in which we could all work, all we worship together. But again, I'm hearing. And you know, part of what I've have appreciated this week at Holden is the opportunity to get together with the deaf. But I think what the question you're asking, and it's an excellent question, is at what point does the line need to be drawn that the two cultures don't want to get together beyond that? And then that certainly would set the ground rules, I think, for where we go from there.